Did you know that the perfect snack exists that not only has the yum factor, because that's important, but also packs a real protein punch? I'm talking about Wonderful Pistachios, a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Now that's a snack you can feel really good about. It's hard for me to currently pick a fave because they have several flavors to choose from, including no salt and jalapeno lime options. But if I absolutely had to, I'd say I'm in my no shells, Wonderful Pistachios, sea salt and vinegar era. It's the ultimate snacking solution for when you need a quick, convenient, and tasty boost of pistachio goodness straight out of the bag. Whether you enjoy the ritual of cracking open each nut or you lean towards the ease of no shells, Wonderful Pistachios has something for everyone. It's time to elevate your snacking game with Wonderful Pistachios. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more. Hey, hey, so welcome back to the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast. My name is Bree. I'm the host of the show as well as the founder of Brown Girl Self-Care. Brown Girl Self-Care is a platform and space of intentional healing, joy, rest, and abundance for Black women. Before I get into today's conversation, I want to let you know that for the first time probably ever in the history of the podcast, I am doing a book giveaway. Yes, you heard that right. I am doing a book giveaway courtesy of today's guest. So if you are a 9-to-5er, you are working in corporate spaces, and you feel like there is a playbook that everybody else has gotten except for you, then today's episode is definitely for you because this giveaway is called Unspoken, and it's basically a playbook or a guide for cracking the corporate code. You need to get your hands on this book. If, again, you are a 9-to-5er, you never learned how to negotiate, you feel like you need to code switch in the office, like all the things, okay? So here's how you're going to get your chance to win. There's going to be 2 copies, and all you need to do is go onto Instagram and share this episode either on your page or in your stories, and be sure to tag Brown Girl Self Care. Okay. So again, if you want to get your hands on this book, you want a chance to get a copy for free 99, then go ahead and share this episode of the podcast to your stories on Instagram or to your main feed, and be sure to tag me, Brown Girl Self Care. 2 lucky winners are going to be chosen on Friday, this coming Friday. Okay. So now let's go ahead and get into the episode.
Well, how many times have you walked into a corporate environment and been the only one or felt like an outsider? How many times have you gone into these spaces, these corporate, quote unquote, corporate spaces, and felt the need to change things up and really not be your authentic self? And on top of that, how many times have you just taken the job and you realize after the fact you just were not getting the coins that you deserved for your labor? Because your labor is money, honey. That's what I want to talk about today. I'm in conversation with Dr. Ella Washington, and she's an organizational psychologist whose mission is to elevate humanity in the workplace. She's also the founder and CEO of Elevate Solutions, an organization committed to integrated DEI strategies, where she leads efforts to foster healthier, more equitable work environments. Can you tell us more about what your work looks like?
Yeah, so I wear a few different hats, but they all converge on under that umbrella that you shared, you know, elevating humanity in the workplace. And it all stemmed from the fact that we spend so much of our lives at work or working, more than a third, 90,000 hours based on current research. Wow. It's a lot, right? It's a lot of our lives at work. And so when you think about a third of your life, you know, life is precious. And I don't think a third of my life should suck just because I'm working. We are on an uphill battle in many cases. But what I found is that there are strategies and tactics that you could use to navigate these workplaces in a way that hopefully will serve your work experience a bit better. So that is why I do the work that I do.
I want to get into the fact that you have a book that you just dropped. Just like as of this recording, just a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago.
15 days.
Listen, yes. She has the date. Like,
fake, yeah. Off the shelf, fresh off the press.
Yes. What is the name of your book? Tell us more about that.
So my book is called Unspoken, A Guide to Cracking the Hidden Corporate Code. And this book is all about, one, acknowledging, you know, that the workplaces that we work in, corporate and otherwise, are often not made for people of non-dominant identity, that are Black and Brown folks, that are queer folks, that are people with disability, you name it, right? If you are not of just a very small demographic of cisgender white men that are from a certain a socioeconomic background as well, because you can also be a white man that also feels othered in the workplace. There's so many spaces where we feel othered. And so one is it to acknowledge that the workplace is not made for us, but that does not mean we can't master it. And so the book gives 10 different tools through each chapter of ways that we can navigate these work environments, understanding what the research says about the differences in how women or people of color, et cetera, are treated. So part of it is knowledge is power, right? To understand, like, you know, this is what happens when a woman tries to negotiate her salary versus a man, right? Getting that knowledge, but then also what are the tactics and tools that I can use individually to navigate these spaces? And that doesn't mean that we are excusing poor behavior or bias or discrimination or structural changes that need to be made. But as we are still fighting to make those, these are the tools that we can use to help navigate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that just all that we have to do to show up in these spaces. And so we get into the code switching and having to switch things up. We talk about on the podcast, or I talk about on the podcast, just the fact that a lot of us, we have had to mask, you know, to be in these spaces. And for me, that was a huge struggle because I was, and I'm still learning who I am, you know, identity is so important. But when you are struggling to just kind of like figure out who you are, what you want, what you love, what your needs are, what areas you may want to heal, what brings you joy, like just who you are as a person. And then you have to go into this space where you've already told us, Dr. Ella, that we're spending, I think you said, a third of our lives typically. So when we enter that space, we're putting on this mask, or we're being someone else so that we can navigate easier and fit into these spaces. Like, what do you feel like that, in your opinion, what is that? What do you feel like that does to us as a person?
I feel like Paul Laurence Dunbar, we wear the mask. You know, that is such a classic, but it really speaks to the bifurcated identity experience of many Black folks, especially at work. Oh, you know, part of where I start with my book Unspoken, chapter one is about owning your story and figuring out who you are as an individual, to your point of like, just figure yourself out, like therapy, coaching, you know, family traumas, all that. We got to figure ourselves out before we can be good for anybody or anything or any work environment, right?
Yeah.
All your story is about connecting with what are those things in your life and in that make you who you are, good, better, good, bad, or indifferent, right? But when you own your story, you're more easily able to connect with that work persona, how you want to show up at work. Oftentimes, we're not self-aware enough to understand how we're showing up, and we haven't thought about it in a strategic way. How do we want to show up? How do we want to be, right? This is about playing the game, you know? And, you know, this book is about, if you are playing the corporate game, you have to understand how you're showing up. And part of that, again, is connecting with yourself. And then asking yourself, how do I want to show up? What feels comfortable to me? Is coaching something I'm okay with, or is it something I'm absolutely not okay with? To what end? What are my boundaries when it comes to, you know, the parts of my identity I want to share or not share, right? So chapter one is all about owning your story. And then getting into chapter two, it's leaning into your strength. Recognize who you are and how you want to show up. And then we can move into tactically, what are the things that you want to demonstrate? What are your strengths? And how do you want to bring those strengths out in the workplace? And like I said, you know, while these things are good management practices in general and good workplace practices, I specifically layer on the experience of people from non-dominant identities. Because, if you think about strength, if you've ever done Gallup Strengths Finders or any other type of assessment, I'm a big Gallup Strengths fan. So however, there are many assessments, and you don't need an assessment to learn your strengths. So in the book, I talk about how do you identify your strengths without even the assessment. But going back to that assessment, one of the most, you know, popular strengths, and I say popular with quotations because all strengths should be equal, but command is one of those ones that people like to have. Command is all about, you know, I know how to work a room. I know how to get attention. I, when I speak, people listen, right?
Yeah.
Great. Sounds awesome, you know, for your professional development. But if you are a Black man, and you grow up demonstrating that command, or a Black woman,
right?
Have there been spaces that have told you that that's actually not a strength, that you need to dial it down, or you're being aggressive or intimidating, right? And so part of what I do in each chapter is provide that lens of how identity connects with these and tries to provide a different perspective or a layered perspective on, okay, so if command is one of your strengths, and maybe all your life you got that negative feedback, you're having to work through that, right? As now adult, people are like, oh yeah, we want you to show up as this executive, but all your life you've been told you've been doing too much, right? How do we navigate? How do we come to terms with that? And so that's where, you know, the book really tries to dig deep for each individual person's experience.
Yeah, that is so interesting. What are the other ones besides command, in case people don't know? Because I have forgotten myself too. It's been a long time.
Well, with Gallup Strengths Finders, there are 34 different strengths.
Okay.
So for example, mine are individualization, focus, harmony, achiever, and discipline. But there are 34 different other ones that you could be a part of or that you could have. But while I love, you know, Gallup Strengths, I also am a huge believer that it's not, the assessment gives us language, right? That we can talk to each other about these strengths. If we have the same list of 34. So when I say this, you can look it up and know what I mean. So I think it's great for team. But when we're thinking about from an individual development perspective, think about, what are those things that you're naturally good at? What are those things that all your life people are like, oh, you're such a good public speaker. We love it when you give those speeches at church. Or, are you talk too much? But we see, right? Whatever that feedback you've been getting all your life, that give you a cue to your natural strength, right? And then what are those things that when you do, you just feel in flow? Like you may
feel
great. And though it's still work, I'm not saying that it feels like you're on the beach, but you're just, you know, when you're in your groove, you're like, yeah, I'm writing this book. I'm in my groove. Or yeah, I'm, you know, doing this spreadsheet. Those can give you some cues to your strength. And then last but not least, as I talk about in the book, ask for feedback for people that are closely with you or who know you really well, right? Because sometimes we can't even see how great we are in some areas compared to what other people can see. And so I encourage people to ask for feedback as much as you can from people you work with, but also people who know you really well.
Yeah, I love that. And raise your hand if you're listening to this and you got, when you were little, especially like on your report card and stuff, talks too damn much. That was definitely me. Like I always would get like the good grades for the most part, but every time on like behavior, it was talks too much.
Much is now has my own podcast that is phenomenally
successful. Exactly.
So we are. That is your.
Yes. I love that. So let's talk about these corporate spaces. We talk about how, and I'm so glad that you brought this up because I've said this before too, like it's a game. It really is a game, but there's rules to this game. And I feel like there are broad rules to this corporate life. But then for us, there's also other rules specifically for us as Black women. So with that said, what are some of the unspoken rules like you've noticed maybe in your corporate career? Like what have you noticed personally?
Well, you know, first of all, there are rules and then there are rules, right? For everything in life. In the corporate world, it's no different. In every organization, there are the written and formal rules that you may get in your HR handbook. So something like, you know, our business hours are from 9 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, right? That's formal. It's written. You'll probably find in the HR handbook. But then in every organization, there are these informal ways that we do things. That's our culture, right? And so it may be something like, we don't really take meetings after 3 p.m. on a Friday, right? That's not going to be in any handbook. But if you sit there long enough and you try to put some meetings after 3 p.m., somebody's going to tell you like, yeah, we don't really do that. Yeah. Or you'll like, oh, dang, nobody is meeting after 3 p.m. Okay, so we don't do that. That's an informal and unspoken rule. Now, some of these rules and the ways we do things, they are innocuous. They're just, you know, habits of us being human. But there are other rules that can have an impact on our experience in the workplace. And so, you know, some that may readily come to mind for our listeners are, you know, it's not what you know, but who you know, right? Okay, now that may feel like, oh, yeah, I've heard that before. But what did that really mean? What that means is that my competence and even my merit or just my hard work may not be enough to get me where I want to go in this organization. Now, that's counter to what most organizations would say. We're a meritocracy. If you work hard, you can achieve. But at the same time, everyone would nod their head yes and say, oh, it's not what you know or who you know. It's not just what you know, but it's who you know, right? So those are the types of rules that we are trying to give voice to and unpack. And how do we address that, right? So some things that we can do, for example, how do we make sure we have the right network in place? Because if it is about who I know in my organization, who do I need to know? And how do I figure out who I need to know? And how do I know if I'm knowing the right people? And how do I leverage those relationships, right? And so going from, wow, no one told me, to, okay, now that I know, this is how I can navigate these spaces. Again, it doesn't always make it right in terms of it should be about your merit. It should be about your competence. But we know from many years of experience, countless research studies, that that is unfortunately just not enough, especially for people like us.
So we got to know people. What if you're someone, and this is, I'm not sure if we can speak to this, but what if you're someone who is more introverted on the job, but you've got to be knowing all the people and doing all the things, and it's just exhausting for you? How do you, how would someone, maybe like, what's a step or two that someone could do to maybe start to build a network if it's kind of hard for you to socialize, or you know what I mean, in that way?
So first of all, that's a huge challenge. I mean, folks who are considering themselves introvert, I would consider them non-dominant identities in the workplace because, you know, especially in the corporate world, it is made for extrovert. The loudest person in the room, the first one to raise their hand, is often the person that's most noticed, right? And so, you know, these non-dominant identities are absolutely intersecting and duplicative. Like, you know, they add on to each other, right?
Yeah.
If you're an introverted person, you know, that's why I start with owning your story. So one, get comfortable with being like, okay, I am an introvert in this room full of extroverts. Okay, let's just acknowledge that this is who I am. I'm comfortable with my identity. I'm not trying to change myself. And I know that I may need to have some different navigation strategies, right? And so that's why it starts with owning your story and then leaning into your strengths. So I am an introvert. However, I am really good at maybe the email follow-up, or I'm really good at connecting people, or whatever it might be, right? What are your strengths? How can you lean into your strengths, knowing that, you know, this organization is full of extroverts and there's a certain type of success profile? The next thing you got to do is also be strategic, right? So if in the meeting, the only people who get called on are the people who raise their hand first, right? There may be opportunity for you to stretch a bit there, right? Get out of your comfort zone, not your favorite thing, but also, how can I get in on the radar of the manager who's running that meeting and say, hey, I know, you know, every meeting we usually have an opportunity to volunteer for something. Sometimes I'm not the first person to raise my hand because I'm an introspective thinker, but I'd absolutely like to be considered for the next opportunity, right? So how are there ways that I can be strategic, understanding like, hey, maybe I'm not the first to raise my hand. That doesn't mean I can't, you know, let someone know that I'm interested. That doesn't mean that I can't find a different way to navigate this situation, even though, you know, it may not be the most direct or easiest way to do so.
Okay. So it is possible for introverts to still do their thing, you know, but you have to just be strategic with it, right?
It all have to be strategic. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how smart you are, you know, what schools you went to, how competent you are. You have to be strategic because we have seen time and time again that no matter if you have all the right things on your resume, you know, the cards are still stacked against us. You know, we fought with President Gay earlier this year, right? And that is like a shining example of, you know, if people are biased against you and if the cards are stacked against you, your excellence, unfortunately, is not going to be enough, right? But in most situations, being strategic can help you to navigate these spaces that, again, are just, you know, often not made for us.
Yeah. One thing that I was going to say, and you, because you said excellence, and that was kind of like a trigger for me. And I'm just curious, like, do you feel this way? Or if it's just me, we think about Black people, like we have to always like show up in our brilliance and our excellence in these spaces. We cannot be mediocre. We can't be the mediocre white man. You know what I mean? We have to just show up and just be this shining star for, you know what I mean? Just to get our regular do and to be seen as, you know, someone that's easy to work with or someone that's whatever. Have you ever experienced that? And like, what would you say when it comes to like us needing to show up that way? And my second part of the question is like just us showing up regardless and masking. Excuse me. How do we navigate? I'm so sorry. Excuse me. How do we navigate just being ourselves?
Yeah.
In these spaces without having to mask?
And so as someone who has grappled with this term, Black excellence, for quite a while, I spent a lot of time thinking about that. For me, what it comes down to is, you know, no amount of excellence is going to, like I said before, negate bias. If someone wants to judge you and be biased against you, they're just going, you could be perfect and, you know. But for me, perfection is actually not the goal. So sometimes we attribute excellence to being perfect.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I have a chapter in the book called Be Ready, Be Right, Be Excellent. And that's creating your own standard of excellence. So for me, it's about when and how am I at my best, my personal best, not the best that, you know, someone else, not the best that the white person is saying and contorting myself, my best. When am I showing up and I am knocking it out the park? Is it because I got 8 hours of sleep and got that breakfast that I know I need? Is it that, you know, I didn't do any work on Sunday and I connected with my community and I feel recharged? Is it that I practiced that presentation 15 times, even though it was annoying, but I know I practiced it 15 times, I was able to knock it out of the park. Whatever that personal standard of excellence is, I think that is the most critical thing for us to have. Because again, that's not about other people. That's about you knowing you do your best. And I get that from my mom. So when I was growing up, my mom never asked me, you know, how did everybody else do on the test? Or, you know, what was the average? She always asked me, did you do your best? And in many ways, that was actually more humbling and a little more come to Jesus moment than other questions, because I could have done better than everybody else. But if I didn't do my best, then I'm still not living up to the God-given potential that I have. Right. And to me, that's what it's all about. It's not about these shifting standards of external excellence. What is your personal standard of excellence? So as Black people, yes, we do have to work twice as hard to get half as far. And all those things are true. And we cannot kill ourselves trying to be perfect in a world that was not made for us. But what we can do is lean into our own promise and potential by showing up as our best and creating our own standard of excellence that we live up to. And what everybody else does, that's on them, right? And I found in my life and career, when I show up as my best, I do knock it out the park. And not many people can touch me. And I think that's the same for most people as well.
Okay, I had to snap for that. I love that. So it literally, as all things, like it starts with us, has really nothing to, I mean, hear me what I'm saying, what I'm trying to say. It has really nothing to do with the outside, at least initially anyway. It really starts with you, your standards, your values, what you feel is your best, how you're pushing yourself in that zone. Again, not from that outwardly perspective, but like your mom was asking, let's say you got a 95 on the test. Great. But you're like, well, I could have got 100, but I didn't study. I didn't go to bed on time. I woke up 3 hours before the test. I didn't know where I was. You know what I'm saying? Like,
reverse is also true, right? So if I got a C on that, and, you know, I struggled in chemistry, y'all, in high school. Ooh, struggled. Did I do my best? I did, right? Yeah. And so then it's like, okay, what are the mitigation strategies? Because the C is not going to get us to college, but you did your best. And so how do I support you now, right? Because you gave your best, and how do we, you know, put those structures into place? The same thing when it comes to doing our personal best. Because when I say best, that doesn't mean that we have 100% to give every day. Because best is 70% because I got other stuff going on, right? So that also allows us grace. I gave my best. And our best does not look the same every day. So I think when you think about your own personal standard of excellence, yes, we want to be, we all wish we were perfect, but none of us are, right? How do we create that standard of excellence that pushes us to achieve our potential, but also gives us that natural grace that we need as humans.
I'm so glad that you said that, Dr. Ella, because in my mind, I'm still like, did you notice how I said you got a 95, but you could have got 100? I still deal with the perfectionism thing, having to get the best score. So I'm so glad that you said that. Like, sometimes maybe your best is 100 some days. Sometimes maybe your best is 50%. You did the best that you could. That's all that you could give. You gave what you could give. And that was that. You did the things, and that's just what it was. You know what I mean? So like you said, being able to recognize that in that moment, and if it doesn't pan out, you know, at least you know, I honest to God, I tried everything that I could. And then it's taking a step further.
That's the thing. No one else. It's like that. That's that come to Jesus moment in the mirror that you have with yourself. You know that you gave it your all. You can, you know, talk to your comrades and tell them whatever, right? But you know deep down that you gave it your all. And to me, I think that's really powerful, because then when you get environments where you're giving your all and it's not being valued, it's not being reciprocated, you're hitting the brick wall, you're seeing the bias and discrimination come out, then you're like, okay, it's not me. First of all, I'm not crazy. I know that I'm doing my best. I'm getting the coaching. I got feedback. This may not be the place for me, right? So I think when you have that standard of excellence, I, in the book, I give an example of the late Chadwick Boseman and how he struggled early in his career with some stereotypical roles. And he actually got fired for, you know, asking questions about like, person on crack. And why is this? Why am I a kid? And why isn't my father around? Why can't my mother take care of me? And things like that. And he did get fired from an early role. But he knew that he was bringing his best, right? And so that did not deter him from being the phenomenal actor that he went on to be, even after getting fired from that soap opera early on, because, again, he was operating at his own standard of excellence and his best. So I think it helps us to not, you know, turn everything outward, because some things are out of our control. And sometimes we'll have to walk away from situations that are not for our best well-being.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
I love that. I love that so much. So can we talk about code switching? Because that is a big thing. I was on YouTube the other day. I can remember whose channel it was. And it was a comedy skit with two Black women about code switching. And so the two ladies were on the couch, and then one girl's phone would ring, and it was her job. So she had just been talking with her girlfriend, and then the phone rings, and of course she's like, hello, this is so-and-so, oh yes, you know what I mean? Just giving that corporate office energy, that code switch energy. And she got the phone, she'd be like, so yeah, girl, you know? And it was so funny, but it was just like, it just hit home. But what was funny, even funnier, was that the second girl was like giving her all this like attitude, like, why are you switching up like that? But then when her phone rang, the other girl phone rang, she was like, what's up, dog? Yo, okay, okay. And then she got the phone. Okay, girl. So it was like she was also code-switching with her community. So that, I've never even thought about it from that perspective, but just code-switching is really a thing for us. Can we talk about that?
Yes, we all code-switch.
Yeah.
Deloitte has some research that they've been doing for some years now. And it's something like, you know, 90% of people say they code switch, all people, right? Including white cisgender men. However, to no surprise, people of non-dominant identities code switch more. Feel like we have to code switch more. Yeah. So we all do it. It's a natural human thing to, you know, want to connect in our environment in a certain way. However, you know, code switching has upsides and downsides, right? Upsides from a research perspective is that, unfortunately, you are more likely to get the job when you are speaking in the vernacular and tone of the people that are there, right? You are more likely to, unfortunately, get higher promotion rate. Code switching has been proven to have a positive impact in that way. Mm-hmm. The downside is the psychological toll that it takes on code switching. especially if you're feeling like you're code switching and having to downplay parts of your identity that are important to you. And people often, to your point of the skit, don't think about the fact that you also can have these backlash effects in your own community. So you feel like you're having to code switch at work, and then you come home and people are giving you flack about code switching at work for the job that you're trying to, you know, pay for everything for, you know? And so it's like that all my life I had to fight feeling. It's like, it's real. It happened. And so in my book, I talk about, one, like, where is the line for each individual around code switching and authenticity? The challenge is there's no one size fits all answer, and there's no right or wrong answer. So those of us who feel like, oh, I ain't never code switching, I'm gonna just be me all the time, you got to take me as I am, that's cool, sis. That's great. And those of us who feel like, well, you know, I code switch so that I can be seen a certain way in my organization, I have goals, that's cool too, right? Mm-hmm. I believe there is a right and wrong. I think you just that self-work, you have to figure out what works for you, mm-hmm. and what are you comfortable doing, and to what extent you're willing to code switch and downplay parts of your identity. So for example, I had a client who was literally in tears that I was coaching some years ago, because she said, I am so tired of downplaying my accent. I have to turn off my accent at work all the time, and I'm physically exhausted from having to speak a different way because she had a Caribbean accent. That's an example of code switching that's probably not benefiting you, and that, you know, maybe that's not the right work environment if you feel like you have to do that, because that is breaking your soul, like literally, like you're tired, you're exhausted. However, for me, for example, as a professor, some might say code switching because I have some colleagues that, you know, will wear jeans in the classroom and they dress down. I'm going to dress up every time when I go into the classroom. That is how I prefer to be seen. But also, research is very clear that especially as a Black woman, a younger appearing Black woman as well, that, you know, the level of respect and deference is different when I am dressed in what deemed as what a professor would wear, a suit or something similar, versus if I have a jeans. Now, someone could say, well, I just want to be me. I should be able to teach the knowledges up here. Yeah, you're right. You should. And, you know, the research is clear. And so for me, code switching in that way, I am okay with that. I'm good with that. It does not make me feel a way. I actually like dressing up because I like being cute. And my students always, you know, give me compliments on my outfits, right? So those are different examples. So all code switching is not equal either. That's the other thing I wanted to like really start to understand, because we all do code switching to an extent, but it's not all made equal. We have to start to unpack, like, okay, why am I code switching? How am I code switching? Am I doing it because it's strategic, or am I doing it because if I feel like if I speak with my, you know, natural accent, I'll be judged, right? So the why behind the code switching, I think, is equally as important as even the initial acknowledgement, like, oh, I'm code switching.
That why, that is such a powerful question. That talk about like self-awareness, you know, that why. Because if you are code switching or whatever, and you think it's just surface level, like, oh, everybody does it or whatever. But then if you start asking yourself, like, why, and you start kind of like digging, especially if there's like some unhealed stuff in there or some chaotic feelings about yourself or just whatever, or like programming or conditioning, like, well, this is how I always did it. But then you're like, well, why? Oh, well, my mom, when she used to talk about work and she went through these things, or like whatever, just like unpacking and uncovering that stuff with that question, it can be like life-changing. It can be life-changing.
And then once you get to that depth of the why, then you can ask yourself, do I want to continue to code switch or not? It is a choice, okay? And it may be a strategic choice, like, okay, I am going to continue to do this because X, Y, and Z, or I am not going to continue to do this. And this is what I make. Again, that's why it is at that individual level.
Yeah.
Not a one size fits all. So you got to, you know, figure out that you are code switching. Then you got to figure out why. And that's that self-conversation. And then you have to determine, do I want to continue to or not? Mm-hmm. And to what extent, right? Most, it's usually not a binary yes or no. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's, okay, I will, you know, straighten my hair at work because that's how I like to wear my hair. But if I just came back from the beach, it's going to be a bun and we just go roll with it that day. Whatever it is, like, what are your boundaries? Like, to what extent are you willing to code switch or you're not? Like, I ain't never straightening my hair again because that's just not what I want to do. whatever that is, you got to have that self-conversation and be comfortable with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Those boundaries, that why and those boundaries. And then for some of us, it's like, after you explore those questions, those whys, and kind of get to the root, you're just like, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. And you just walk away. But like you said, it's a personal choice. But if you haven't done the work and you're, for example, let's say you're in a corporate space, 9 to 5, whatever, and you're just like, I'm having all these challenges and they're telling me I'm too much or this and that. And I got to do all these things and show up this way and I'm tired. Da, da, da. If you haven't, though, been questioning, like doing some of the work like you've mentioned today, Dr. Ella, I just want to make it very clear that, for example, you going and giving your resignation and quitting and then going to another office where the same kind of stuff might present itself, those challenges are still going to be there. So there's like no avoiding the work is my point. Regardless of what the different, how it shows up in your day to day, you've got to do the work. Yeah. You've got to do the work.
And once you do the work, then you can better name. And name your boundaries. So when you go to that next job, you can name, you know, these are the types of things that I need to be successful, or these are the things I'm not quite comfortable doing or saying, or, whatever it is. And in my book, Unspoken, at the end of every single chapter is a, you know, self-reflection.
Love that.
So in this book, you have the opportunity to do some of that work. And my goal is for you to kind of do that first layer of self-reflection and work after every chapter in this book. And then, you know, using what you've uncovered to have more conversations with your peers and your mentors or your coach, whoever it is, like, let this be a start of the work that we need to do as we're navigating these. And so that's why I provide those tools at the end of every chapter.
So in your book, would you say that it would be good for someone? I feel like it would be good for everyone, but would it really be good for someone that has not yet, for example, accepted a job? They're looking for a new position or something like that, because I feel like, especially since you're talking about identity and other things, boundaries and digging deep and asking why and doing the work beforehand, to me, it would make sense for someone who's in between jobs or they're thinking that they might be jumping ship soon, because now you have a foundation from which you're making more educated choices in your career, right?
Absolutely. I think the book is really helpful for people just starting off in a new industry or a new career or in a transition period. But I also think that, you know, anyone should be refining and redefining their playbook often, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we know today, in 5 years, we're going to have different goals and aspirations, and we've learned more about ourselves and what we need. And maybe we're at a different place of life. Like, maybe 5 years ago, we didn't have kids and now we got 3 kids. So our goals and boundaries are going to look different, right? And so for me, it's one of those things that you want to have a good foundation, but you should also revisit depending on where you are and where your goals are. The book is strategically split up into thirds. Mm-hmm. So the first third is about doing that self-work, that owning your story, leaning into your strength, and thinking about authenticity and code switching. Those are the first three chapters. And so that's the work that we've talked a lot about. But the second third of the book is all about the tactics and skills that you could be implementing when you're in the workplace. So it's about negotiation. It's about reading the room, and it's about building your influence network. So building your network and your power influence within your organization. No matter where you're in your career, you could always use a tune-up of those skills, right? Yeah. Are you negotiating enough? Are you seeing opportunities to negotiate? And we're not just talking about when you get a new job. We're talking about in your job, your role, you know, your responsibilities, all of those things you can continuously negotiate. Mm-hmm. Relationships, are you negotiating those well? Our networks, you know, we should always be building those and refining those, reading the room. You know, are we understanding the environment? Do we have enough information? Do we need to approach things differently? Are we getting the outcomes that we want? So I think, you know, the second third of the book is really skills based as far as application in the workplace. And then the last third goes into what's next? What happens after this particular job? It's more big, which is why I think it really can apply to anybody, no matter where they are in their career. It talks about leaning into grow. So what are those uncomfortable moments that we need to lean into to grow as an individual, to grow in our career? It's another chapter on creating your niche. So what are the things that I bring to the table? What is the unique mark I want to make? It could be, you know, impact-wise in this role. It could be impact-wise on the world. Like, what's my mission and purpose? Like, what is my niche and how all the things that, you know, you've talked about before then, how does that lean into me creating my niche? And then last chapter is, you know, writing your own playbook for your own. No one is more in control of our career than we are. Yes, there are powers that be, yes, there are external factors, but we are in the driver's seat of our career. And so chapter 10 helps us to really unpack that, uncover that, and figure out what's next for our playbook. And so I do truly believe that this book can be helpful for anyone, no matter where they are in their journey. And I think, you know, each chapter kind of leans into a different part of that journey.
So what I'm hearing basically is that everybody needs this book.
Bad book.
Absolutely. And just so you know, if you're listening to the podcast, if you follow Brown Girl Self-Care on Instagram, if you're a part of the mailing list, and also if you're following Dr. Ella, she has been gracious enough to allow us to give away 2 copies of her book. I've never done this on the podcast before, but I believe in the power of this book and Dr. Ella Washington's words so much that I was like asking them, kind of like begging them, can we give away 2 books, please? And they were like, yeah. She's like, yeah, we can. That sounds great. So 2 lucky listeners are going to have an opportunity to get their hands on a copy of her book for free 99. So I will make sure that we get that into 2 people's hands because I really believe in the power of your book. So I want to also talk. Oh, go ahead.
No, anyone can take. I have a free assessment on my website, ellaeffington.com. And so no matter where you are in your career, you can take this free assessment. This kind of gives you some inklings and some nudges to areas you might want to pay attention to. So that free assessment is on my website. Anybody can take it. And so it's another, you know, tool that you could use in your playbook as you're figuring things out to figure out where you want to kind of start on your journey.
Yeah. When you said playbook, my ears perked up like, yes. So please, you have to get this book. I wanted to ask you if, you, for example, you put in application or whatever, or you apply for a good job and they say, yes, like, oh, my God, they chose me. I feel special. I just got to take whatever they give me. I never really learned you're like, no, sis, no, you don't. I never really learned the art of negotiating, right? So I know you talk about this in your book, but can we talk about that just very briefly, just negotiating and getting what you're worth? And you said not even just before you get the job, but you were talking about in different areas, like period. Like I never thought about negotiating for a different position or anything like that. Anyway, I want to talk about that real quick. Can we do that?
We absolutely can. It's probably one of my favorite things to talk about. So first of all, negotiation is a life skill. Negotiation is not a skill to get a new job. Like that is one thing you can do, you know, get a new job, get the salary. But you have to think about negotiations as a life skill. We negotiate every single day, all the time. If you have kids, you're negotiating what the bedtime is. If you have a partner, you're negotiating who's doing the dishes or who's choosing where we're doing dinner, right? We negotiate all day, every day. We just don't think about them as negotiations because negotiations get the bad rap as, you know, only being self-advocacy, being selfish or being combative. And I like us to shift our mindset that negotiation is first of all, negotiation is an interdependent process of 2 people or multiple parties needing each other for an optimal outcome. So, for example, if you don't need the other person, then it's actually not a negotiation. You don't really need to negotiate, right? But if you're a negotiation, if you're in a negotiation, that means there's some interdependency. That means we actually are working together. We're trying to get the optimal outcome. So it's not necessarily me against you. For example, when you're doing a new job, right? They want you because they want you and your wonderful skills. And you want the resources they're going to provide, the salary, the role, the experience, what have you. So we're looking for the win-win here. It's actually not me against the company. It's how do we get a win for me and a win for you, right?
Yeah.
So that's first of all, just a mindset shift that we have that's not negative, it's not bad, it's not combative. And the best negotiated deals are those that look for a win-win and look for ways to expand the pie of whatever we are negotiating about and not just thinking about, okay, I get this, that means you don't get that, right? Sometimes we do have negotiations like that, but most negotiations are negotiations that we're able to expand the pie or create win-win solutions for all parties involved. So those are the best case scenarios. And so in your workplace, right, you know, beyond, again, when you get the job and, you know, look at the salary, you know, in the book, I list about 20 different non-salary things that you can negotiate.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So people often just think about salaries.
Yeah.
What about everything else? What about vacation time? What about location? What about other benefits the company might offer, like transportation benefits that actually translate into cash money? If you think about it, if they're giving you, you know, $100 a month to ride the metro or whatever the case is. And so in the book, I give a list of many things that are non-salary things that you can negotiate from the front end. But then there's also ways that you should be negotiating in your career. So I share a story of Benjamin Collier, who talks about how, you know, he is writing his performance review all year. His manager just doesn't know it. Mm-hmm. Every, you know, quarter, he's sending updates about how what he's done, how he's tracking against his goals, the wins that he's had. And then when it comes to the end of the year, there is no surprise in the performance conversation. Everything's already been in writing. He's negotiated that promotion or that raise or whatever because he's provided the evidence, mm-hmm. right? Already been in that conversation. And he's created the win-win scenarios, right? So, you know, I've brought all these wins to the company. It only makes sense that, you know, we would be able to talk about a higher salary or more responsibility mm-hmm. or whatever that win is, and positioning it as like, I've already done these great things. I want to continue to do even more great things. Let's figure out how we get that win-win of this, you know, nice, you know, 10K raise or whatever.
Yes.
You know, so in that way, you see, I'm still accomplishing my goals, but it is through the lens of negotiation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely something that I was not taught. And I think some of my people in my community, like I said, like I get questions and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know. But so I'm glad that we were able to speak on that, because that is such a vital skill to be able to have. And you're right. I didn't really think about it in that way. But we are negotiating, like you said, all the time, every day for different things. And you're right. Also, at least for me, just thinking along the lines of negotiating, it felt like something that I wasn't really allowed to do, or it felt hard or not for me. Like I just had to kind of like take whatever was in the offer, in the package, you know?
I believe everything is negotiable.
Yeah.
That is how I live my life.
My family, that.
You know, to their demise and irritation sometimes, but everything is negotiable. Like everything ethically as well. Okay. I'm not mm-hmm. talking about, you know, getting over on people and anything that's unethical. But, yeah. You know, most things in life are negotiable, especially when it comes to business.
Yeah. I love that. So as we wrap up, Dr. Ella, this has been an amazing conversation, and we tried our best to condense a plethora, a wealth of information down into just like a, what, 45, 55 minute conversation. So there's much more on the table to this discussion, and you're going to find pretty much a lot of everything that you're going to need in her book. But as we wrap up, what final thoughts might you have for someone that's listening, specifically a Black woman that is listening, that wants to get started on just this journey of negotiating better, or just being able to show up as herself in the office, like one small step that she can start with now, she can take away from this conversation to move her, propel her forward?
Yeah. You know, there are two main things that come to mind for me. One is, I hope you feel seen in this conversation. You are not alone. You are not crazy. You are not making things up. The thing that you felt like happened, that thing happened. You know, so much of our work experience can feel isolating and lonely because we're like, now, did anybody else hear that microaggression that, you know, that person said, or anybody else see that? And you could just feel crazy. And so just create space that you are not crazy. You are not making this up. Those things did happen. And there are things that we can do about it, right? As far as navigating these environments. So one, I want you to feel seen and just take a breath like, oh, okay. Now that I know I'm not crazy. And I would say, you know, the second thing is to make sure you're leaning into your network of family, friends, and professional network of people that you can have these conversations with. My big push is to speak the unspoken, say the uncomfortable thing, create space to ask the questions that need to be talked about, right? There's just so much, like you said, to unpack here. But the one thing that I hope this book does is to ignite more of these necessary conversations so that we can be in environments where we can thrive and we can feel a bit more comfortable. We can feel a bit more like our authentic selves. And so those are, you know, two things I would just leave with the listeners to feel seen and valued for who you are, exactly how you are and where you are at this point in your life. And lean into the opportunity to speak the unspoken and have those necessary conversations.
That is so powerful. Like, sis, yes, you deserve to thrive. You deserve to be yourself. You deserve to have what you need, have what you want, have what you desire. You are smart enough for it. You are brilliant enough for it. Like, just as you are. That for me is like the message in everything that you said. And I love that. And I love that you said, just first of all, you are seen, because a lot of us, we feel invisible, especially like in these spaces, invisible, and you got to show up a certain way. So you're invisible and you're seen. You know what I mean? If that even makes sense, like invisible, but also seen, having to be this, whatever image people have of Black women, to where we can fit into their box and be acceptable. But if we stray outside of that in any capacity, we're too much, or we're not enough. We're too this, we're too that, we're too whatever. And it's just, yeah. So yeah, like she said, you're not crazy. Absolutely not. That should be the biggest takeaway. Like, you are not crazy. So where can we find you on social? And please also just tell us again about the book and where we can go ahead and get that, and your assessment one more time too, please.
Yes. So you can find out about my work, including the free assessment, at ellafwashington.com. So it's my website, ellafwashington.com. Follow me on LinkedIn, same handle, Ella F. Washington. I'm super active on LinkedIn, and I so enjoy the stories that people share with me about their workplace experiences. So find me on LinkedIn, connect. I love to be in community with you. And check out my book anywhere books are sold: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Audible, you know, wherever you get your books.
Oh, it's on Audible?
It is. I read it.
I love
it. So, oh, for me.
Okay. I love that. I have to get that.
The book is called Unspoken, A Guide to Cracking the Hidden Corporate Code.
I love that. So, yes. But I do want to thank you so much for your time coming to the Brown Girl Self-Care Podcast and spreading awareness on this topic. And so I'm just thankful that you were able to be in community with me today. It has definitely been a pleasure.
It's been all my pleasure, and I'm grateful for the space and opportunity. Thank you.
It's me again, y'all. Before we wrap up for this week's episode of the podcast, I just want to again remind you that there is actually two copies of the books up for grabs right now. A winner will be selected on Friday. Make sure, if you want to get a chance to get your hands on a copy of this book, make sure that you share this episode with your community and tag Brown Girl Self-Care. Okay. All right. So that's it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And next week, we are back to solo episodes. I have a lot to catch you up on. So I cannot wait to be in community with you again. In the meantime, have a blessed week. Continue enjoying this summer, and I will see you next Monday.